Next on RadioSt.Pete.com, this afternoon's Hillsborough County Emergency Policy Group meeting, recorded earlier.
Ms. Wise?
Here.
All right, you have quorum.
Okay, I'm going to call on request from Commissioner Overman to be addressed first. Commissioner Overman, you recognize.
Thank you, Chair. This morning, Commissioner Miller mentioned taking the high road. And many would not know what he was referring to because they haven't seen the emails that we've been receiving that have personally attacked our Chair Miller. I can only speak to the ones that sent to your contact commissioner website tool that were sent to all seven of our board members. Commissioner Miller, the messages are from individuals still in our midst who hold hate in their hearts. Their words, sent anonymously, show ignorance, cowardice, and are reprehensible. These violent words are alarming, and I stand with you and respect your unwavering leadership during these most difficult times. And I'm so sorry this has happened.
Commissioner Overman, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I just received another one about a minute before we came on. That's what you didn't receive this one. This was directed to me, and this is the worst one yet. But again, I ask that everyone take the high road on this. We have some people that want to be mean as they really are. And this one is worse than the ones we received this morning. But I'm going to take the high road and continue to work for the betterment of people in this county. I took that oath just like all of us did, and I'll continue to do that. And thank you very much. I appreciate
it. Thank you, sir.
May I say a few words?
Yes, ma'am.
Just very few. And for the members, when I read that email, I literally broke down in tears. Very heartbreaking when attacks come like that, and they're so vicious and cruel. And I recognize Commissioner Miller. I've known him for a long time. His leadership has always been to do the right thing for people. But I mean, if the listening public is out there, we are basing our decisions on evidence we get from healthcare experts and the pleading we get from healthcare experts to make the very best decisions we can. And we base it on facts. I know a lot of people aren't happy, but the viciousness is uncalled for. And I will say that, and I have said this, some of these need to be investigated because of the hate and the threat that's in them. You can tell in the tone. And maybe this will even make a matter of saying this, but Commissioner Miller don't deserve it. None of us deserve this. And I hope that this, our group, our EPG group, will stand large and just stand against violence, stand against hatred, and just do the right thing for people all the time. But I really, I know it's hurt you worse than it would ever hurt me, but it's uncalled for, and I'm sorry it happened.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Merman. It hurts. It really does. It cuts deep, especially when you're trying to do what's best for the people of this county. I know a lot of people don't agree with my decisions and my votes, and that should be expected. We wouldn't be in this business if we didn't realize that some of the votes we take, people just don't like. But to threaten and to say the words that they say is just totally uncalled for, totally uncalled for. Regardless of what they call me and what they say, I'm going to work on behalf to even protect them. Even protect them. Thank you. Jason Kimball, public comment. Jason, I'm sorry. Hold on. Before we do that, I'm going to move into public comment. We allotted 20 minutes for public comment, 2 minutes per speaker. I apologize, folks. Hold on just a minute. Jason Kimball, you recognize, sir.
Thank you. And I'm sorry, commissioners, that you guys are dealing with those hateful emails, but you have to understand people are understandably very, very upset. The EPG needs to accommodate direct interaction with the medical experts it is utilizing to support Monday's executive order. There have been some pretty outrageous things said. We have John Curris here who's saying that mandatory masks are critically important without providing any basis for that statement. We have Dr. Lockwood here who says if we wear masks, we would have a dramatic reduction of COVID-19 infection, and that we have to assume the spread is due to a lack of facial coverings, but goes on to say that his evidence is based on mobility and cell phone tracking. That's outrageous. That's unacceptable. That's not an acceptable standard whatsoever. And then we had something really reprehensible happen during the last meeting. We had Dr. Sita Lakshmi share her horror stories of terrible clinical outcomes without disclosing her treatment protocols, essentially just putting on display the outcomes of the treatment that she provided to her patients. So what are these medical experts utilizing as a treatment protocol? Do they know about thymusin alpha 1? It's a thymic-derived peptide that has been studied. There was a study just published last month that showed it saved 63% more people than the non-thymusin alpha 1 treated group, and they only looked at severe COVID-19 cases. So there has to be more direct interaction. The order that was created on Monday should be placed on hold until the EPG has consulted with other medical professionals and the community. Public comments are not sufficient. The community has to be engaged. And for the sheriff's office, if the EPG does not hold their order, despite these alarming concerns, you should not enforce it. It should be placed under review by the sheriff's department. Thank you.
Lauren Hensel. Lauren Hensel.
Call drops, Lauren.
Okay. Cheryl Golden.
Yes, good afternoon, EPG group. First, I applaud you all for making face coverings mandatory at this time. As an aside, clearly 7 or 14 days of data is not enough to see a degradation of cases from face coverings. Many of those who were exposed on Monday were told to expect test results as far out as 10 days. Clearly the data is behind the actual infection rate of the virus. And it doesn't include those who forgo testing because of symptoms and the direct contact to a COVID positive patient. For this group to make an informed decision, I think they should continue to ask the medical profession what the right amount of time is to expect change in the data from face coverings. It took this group a lot of time to pass the ordinance, and a lot of time was spent on the effectiveness of face coverings. I think it was clear from the medical experts and their supporting evidence that face coverings slow the spread. I just appeal to this group as a longtime Tampa Bay community member to not let politics get in the way of this pandemic. I heard from physicians we have rapidly escalated the epidemic in our area, and if we continue to exponentially increase cases, the hospitals will need to dedicate more resources in the ED while trying to balance other duties. We heard that death in ICU beds are not the only indicators of a strained system. Since face coverings help, let's keep doing it until we have our cases down to at least something manageable and traceable on our health department. Nobody wants a bad outcome on their conscience. I appeal to this group to focus and to spend the next 4 to 8 weeks coming up with helpful solutions. My fear is we will continue to discuss face coverings with no additional action. We are better than that. Some actions to consider are PSAs on face coverings, social distance and hand washing, reducing bar capacity to 25%, closing them at 11, nothing good happens after 11, not allowing gatherings of greater than a certain size, and providing additional education to business owners. Thank you and Godspeed to all.
Joe Camano. Camano.
My name is Joe Camino. I'm a citizen here in the city of Tampa. First, I just want to commend everybody on the group for taking the time, not only with this group, but also, I guess, your entire lives and trying to make your communities better. and more productive. With respect to the mask, I think it's ridiculous that this is such a polarizing issue. I don't want to wear a mask, but I do if I can't social distance. My family, we all wear masks if we can't social distance. One thing I will say is now that this rule has been passed, you really got to increase the age from 2. I have 2 children under 5. They're just not wearing the mask. And when they do, they take them off, they throw them on the floor. They're getting more germs wearing these masks than they are not wearing the mask. They've lost their masks. They pick up other kids' masks. We've got to raise it. North Carolina's order is 11 and up. We've got to raise the age. That's all, my only request as it relates to the mask. Also, I bring my children to my work because we can't social distance at work. They're not wearing the masks at my work. So you put me in a position, and I'm sure other people in a position, where we either have to make the choice to either not work or commit a crime. And that's where I'm at today. That's where I was at yesterday when we attempted to do it. Thirdly, and I think what we need to start focusing on and pivot to this is we need some leadership to address the unpeaceful protesters who think that they're allowed to occupy the roadways and intersections of our city. When Andrew Warren dropped the charges, they all think that they can get in the roadways and protest. And the cops think they can't arrest them because they've been informed that that's not a crime. Mayor Caster, you know it's a crime to occupy roadways and block roadways, or at least it's an infraction. It's unlawful to assemble without a permit. And if you assemble 2 or more people in a roadway, that's a crime. We need leadership to step up and tell our public that they can't protest in this manner. And tell
thank you, sir. Your time. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Your time is up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Erwin Watson.
Hi, my name is Erin Watson. Everybody spells it wrong or pronounces it wrong. It's okay. I really would like to say a heartfelt thank you to everybody and all the hard work that you've done through this pandemic. I know your job is not an easy one. My job specifically is in food safety and compliance. It is my job to mitigate risk and to risk assess. It's also my job to make sure that the health and safety of the public that I serve is at my utmost concern. Having said that, during a foodborne outbreak such as Hep A, norovirus, et cetera, restaurants have to report that outbreaks report those outbreaks to FDOH. FDOH then puts it into a database for public viewing. These outbreaks are public health concerns for obvious reasons. I believe that COVID-19, while not foodborne that we know of, should have its own database of restaurants or businesses where there are reports of positive cases. I'm not asking you to violate HIPAA. I do think that there should be public knowledge of what those restaurants are. Lastly, I would like to thank all of you who voted for mandating the mask. It is unfortunate that as a guidance, it was not followed. On a personal note, this virus is not about you, it's not about me, and it's about us collectively. And until everyone can put their political agendas and personal opinions aside and make decisions off of what the medical professionals are telling us, basically begging us to do, then the mitigation portion of this virus will never be controlled. Your constituents are listening. We're following your direction. Half of them are scared, and the other half are stubborn, and obviously, to you, Chair Miller, ignorant. And for that, I am truly sorry. But we need a strong, united leadership during this pandemic. Thank you for your time, and I know that you will all do what is best for the public safety in mind. Thank you again.
Thank you. Deborah Bourget.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Deborah Bourget, and I am here this afternoon on behalf of our family's bowling centers, Brandon Crossroads Bowl, and the alley at South Shore, and many other businesses who have called to express their same concerns to me. I share your concerns regarding the resurgence of COVID-19. I do not disagree that wearing face masks will, in all probability, curb the increase in the number of cases. My concern lies with the manner in which the mandate imposes responsibility for enforcement. To make businesses already affected by COVID-19 bear the responsibility to enforce the wearing of face masks or to be subject to criminal prosecution is too much to ask. My family and our employees should not be required to put our own lives and safety in danger. Just last month, a Michigan security guard at a Dollar General store was shot and killed for simply requesting a customer wear a face mask to comply with the governor's executive order. A quick Google search will reveal countless reports of employees being spat upon and attacked for making the simple request to please wear a face mask. By the time law enforcement could be called, the injury has already happened. In the case of Michigan, the death already happened. Those same hateful, ignorant people that Mr. Miller, you experienced and you spoke to and who sent you emails earlier will be the people you are asking us to confront. Surely this board recognizes the hardship that the enforcement requirement places on businesses, as it is exempted government agencies and nonprofits and school organizations from enforcement. Certainly the virus is not less contagious.
Ms. Bogé, thank you. Your time is up.
The end cannot justify the means.
Ms. Bogé, thank you very much. Your time is up. Jeff Bogé?
Yes. Good morning, EPG. My father and I built Brandon Crossroads Bowl in 1990 and then the alley at South Shore in 2008. I have seen many of you in our centers over the years. My employees and I are on the front line every day and night working in these difficult times. Both centers have managed to crawl their way back doing between 65 and 70% of their normal revenue. Both centers experienced the same thing last night. League bowlers were brought up to speed on the new ordinance and told that they must wear face masks at all times other than when they are sitting at the table eating or drinking or physically up to bowl while maintaining social distance or unless they had existing medical condition. About 8 to 10% of the bowlers in last night's league simply left and quit. By the third game of the league, at least half the league had removed their masks despite us asking them to wear them. Open bowling was the slowest it's been since we have reopened. My staff has had to deal with several customers that became irate last night for asking them to wear a face mask. One person even broke a pool stick over his knee in front of the bartender and then tossed it at her, cussing her out before rapidly exiting the building. As was noted earlier in this meeting, the public can be quite abusive and even violent. I would rather have thousands of hateful letters than have my 150 employees subjected to violence and even potential death. This mandate must be corrected. My employees should not be in the position of becoming law enforcement agencies, putting them in potentially dangerous situations. My family should not be in a position of being criminally charged with crimes of people they cannot and do not have that level of control over. Several Tuesdays ago, there was threats of a mass protesting on Highway 301 in Big Bend, right in front of the
alley. Mr. Bogé, your time is up. Mr. Bogé, your time is up. Thank you very much. If Mr. Bogé and Ms. Bogé are still on the line, you called in to the meeting this morning, and I've thought about what you said, and I've talked to our county attorney, Ms. Christine Beck, and I'm going to have Ms. Christine Beck get the number, your phone numbers from our staff that she wants to talk to you about your situation there. Ms. Beck, are you familiar with what I'm saying, right?
Yes, Chair Miller, we'd be happy to reach out to him just to see if there's possibly some exceptions that may be applicable in the order.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Did
you.
Lauren Hansel come back on staff?
No, sir, she did not.
Okay, thank you very much. Commissioner Overman, I see your hand. You recognize? Okay.
Sorry about that.
We're going to move now to emergency management update. Mr. Dudley?
Good afternoon. Most slides here. We continue to see an increase and testing demand. We support our 7 sites. Testing conducted last week at the close of business was 4,853. Total testing since the beginning of operation is over 36,000. Testing conducted this week is over a little over 4,000, and we continue to test through Saturday. We had 3,896 appointments scheduled for last week, and we have 1,555 appointments scheduled for the rest of this week, again through Saturday. We've had a as of last Monday, EPG, we received a call from the Florida Division of Emergency Management, and they have agreed to partner with Hillsborough County and the City of Tampa to support Raymond James testing. On 24 June, yesterday, we conducted a walkthrough of the site with state representatives, and they are prepared to take over on Tuesday, June 30th, and they have committed to moving the Raymond James testing up to 5 days a week, with a goal of 1,000 tests per day. And the ideal times that they recommend for us to run that site is Tuesday through Saturday, 9 to 5. So that'll be a significant increase in our testing efforts. And we appreciate the partnership that they will provide for this community during the increased demand for testing. Logistics. We continue to support logistics operations. We have 4,896 kits on hand. And these are some of the details we will be working out with the state to ensure that we have significant supplies to meet that new demand and the goals that we'll set there. So that's one of the benefits of having this partnership. We have over 2,500 requests that we file with the state, and they continue to support us in these efforts with PPE. We continue to see an increase in PPE we distribute out to some of our most vulnerable populations, long-term care facilities, ALF, nursing home, and our first responders as well. We also started a new initiative this week. Hillsborough County ordered 2 million cloth masks for distribution to the public. And all the teams and partners, we've worked well together to begin distributing these masks. As you can see here on the slide, I've provided the breakdown of what we've done so far. Yesterday, Hillsborough County began distributing free reusable cloth face coverings to residents out at the following locations that's listed, E.G. Simmons, Lake Park, Lithia, and Upper Tampa Bay. As well as Hillsborough County, the three municipalities, they also have distribution plans. So everyone's been working hard to ensure that we provide this resource as far as wide and try to cover every corner of the county. The cloth masks to date, we've done over 1.5 million in cloth masks so far. Between the PPE masks and the distribution of this cloth campaign, my logistics team, an outstanding logistics team here in the county, they've done 2.2 million masks put out into the community since the onset of this event. And I just wanted to let them know that I appreciate all their efforts and the teams that came together quickly to get these sites set up. As you know, we experienced significant heat this week, so all the teams out in the field, they're working hard in all the conditions to ensure that the community has what it needs for us to continue to make sure that we're safe. So these sites will be available here for Hillsborough County 8 to 5 each day while supplies last. And we also will be distributing on Saturdays 9 to 1 while supplies last. The Q&I sites, we have 0 in quarantine, and we have 19 guests checked into the isolation sites. And this concludes my updates. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Dudley. Commissioner Merman, you recognize? Commissioner Merman?
Good. Okay, here I am. Thank you, Mr. Dudley, for your report. Really appreciate it. You guys are working so hard, and I know that everybody really appreciates your efforts. I have had a lot of requests from the my district on the west side of Raymond James, where we have never had any testing site. We've never had anything west of Raymond James. And Town and Country, West Chase, Countryway, Citrus Park, that'd be Lutz, Odessa, Keystone. They have all been requesting maybe a testing site set up, even if it's just one day a week. So I just wanted to ask you if you could talk to Gene early and maybe come together and then get back to me about doing something in that area.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Nivey, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Mr. Dudley, for your report. And I just was notified recently that we have at least 4 school sites that will be distributing masks, free masks to our communities. So I want to thank you for helping to coordinate that through the county. And those sites are Stowers Elementary School in Lithia, Burnett Middle School in Sefner, Leonard High School in Ruskin, and Canela Elementary School in Tampa. The hours of distribution are Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. So thank you for helping to coordinate that, and we are happy to oblige by giving the using those locations, school locations, to distribute those free masks to our community. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your support.
You're welcome.
Okay, Mr. Dudley, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Public health update, Dr. Holt.
Yes, sir. This is Dr. Holt, Florida Department of Health, Hillsborough County. I will provide a high-level overview of the data and update on our contact tracing. Then Kevin Wagner will review the slides and will be available for questions. As of today, 6/25, Hillsborough County has reported 7,332. That's an increase of 435 from the data you'll see presented. The data that Kevin will show of 6,892 is a 61% increase from where we were 7 days ago. We are going to begin to look at data in 7-day intervals. This is important because we need to track the rate of change. Things are moving fast and quickly. This will give us the best measure, the best idea of how widespread and intense the COVID fire that we have burning. I would note that we have tested 7%, and with the state taking over and expanding testing, I suspect that will increase significantly. We looked at the age makeup of the most recent 7 days. 60% are in the age group of under 34. But if you dive deeper into it and you look at the very young, 0 to 14, they make up 5% of the cases, but 20% of the population. This is somewhat similar to our 65 and older population. As we will talk about, 15 to 24, the ages 15 to 24, while they make up 25% of the cases, only 12% of the population. And this is a 200% increase from our last 7 days. 25, 34 still make up the largest number, 30% of the cases, but again, represent 15% of the population. They have not had the same degree of increase over the past 7 days. Looking at it another way, if you look at the last 7 days, almost 50% of our cases are reported comprised these two age groups. My main goal looking forward and by Monday is we're going to look at this data a little closer, again, by race, ethnicity, and zip codes. Let's move on to the 14-day trajectory. Again, looking at this in 7-day intervals. Our 14-day average as of 6/24 would have been 275 average daily cases. Looking at the last 7 days, it's 373, or a 35% increase. Again, I looked at the 2 7-day intervals over the past 14 days. So for the 7 days that ended 6/17, our average was 190 cases a day. Again, compare that to the 373 we are now seeing. That's almost 100% increase. Another way to look at that is referred to as our doubling time. So again, on 6/14, we had 3,612 cases. We now have over 7,300, so we've doubled in less than 2 weeks. Our testing, our rolling day average remains about the same. But again, looking at the past 7 days, we did see a slight decrease, but not significant. Our hospitals, positivity rate is shown to be significantly increased. If you look at, again, the 14-day period, the rate of increase from the 7 days previous was 7%. It is now 18%, close to 1 in 5 of persons tested. Hospitalizations, the number of hospitalizations have increased 26%. We are currently at 269. That would be 12 more than what Mr. Wagner will present. 7 days ago, that was 196. Our daily admissions have also shown to be significantly increased. Have had less impact on our total number of hospitalization, as the hospitals have also been able to offset some of this with discharges. So our bed availability remains at 25% and our ICU at 20%. We had 6 deaths reported today, or 18 over the last 7 days versus 13. Our ED visits for flu-like illness data has not been updated, but we continue to hear from our hospitals that they are seeing quite an increased demand. So in summary, over the past 7 days, the data is clear. Our COVID-19 activity in Hillsborough County is at a high level and it's widespread. When you talk about community-based transmission, you must assume that anyone could either be infected or is infected any place and any time. As you look at contact tracing, we need to be aware that this alone is not even intended to put out a fire of this magnitude. So again, while I do not set policy, I fully support Governor DeSantis and the recent public health advisory issued by the Surgeon General, and to allow local officials to decide how to increase compliance, preferably voluntary, but mandatory as necessary. Face mask when you can't social distance. We can do disagree a lot on the science, but one thing is clear. While they don't work 100% of the time, 100% of the time they do help. And at this point in time, we must do all we can to try and slow this virus down. And while I cannot guarantee this will stop it, it is our best chance. We continue to ask our vulnerable population to bear the brunt of the restrictions and their loss of freedom by staying at home and avoid gatherings of over 50. High level shared points on the contact tracing, which will be the fourth slide. Yesterday, there were 700 people known to be infected. So I've used this fire analogy. I would think of this as individuals or houses, if you will. Some of these will not spread beyond that house. Others, the sparks or embers, will spread locally and will form some clusters. And this is where our contact tracing is most effective. But we do have some where the sparks are spread all over, and we are asked to call and confirm each of these. Increasingly, we're seeing more people either not answering or cooperating. So we don't know who or where these sparks are. We do identify large groups of families and friends, and they are helpful and very effective in notifying them to help us try to break the chain in those groups. We are working with coworkers to make contact, and we are seeing some establishment. We try to focus, and we'd be very alert for what we call or term super spreading events. These are large gatherings. It is hard to confirm that a location or establishment is actually the proven source. So it's more about what's the probability or the possibility. Given that most of our cases are between the ages of 15 and 35, it's no surprise we're seeing some of establishments where they are hanging out. And this is, again, why the Governor DeSantis, using the Department of Better Professional Regulation, Business and Professional Relation, are increasing patrolling in the establishments to find and close when necessary. In the end, when we do reach people or we try to contact them, we essentially tell everyone to get tested if they feel sick, to social distance, and yes, as the Surgeon General has advised, wear a mask if they can't social distance. The primary difference between being a known contact and not knowing that you've been exposed is if you were known contact, you should stay home for 14 days. We hope for voluntary compliance, but there is no enforcement. With that, I would ask Kevin to do his presentation, and we'll be available for questions.
Mr. Chair, can you hear me, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we want to verify that you can see the presentation, sir.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Again, Kevin Wagner, business analyst for the Healthcare Services Department of Hillsborough County. The first three slides that will be presented are just the reaffirming Dr. Holt's information of his observations. I will not be going over those. Those are provided for the EPG members and for the public as a summary review. But those are the first things that he talked about: the population, the results, the hospitalizations, deaths, and the contact tracing on those three slides. With regard to the overall data, again, this was as of yesterday, 6/24, reported by the FDOH up to 6/23. It's always a day behind just from an accounting standpoint. So there was 6,892 total in the county. Again, as we know, we passed the 7,000 mark as of today. But we have tested over 7% of the population, as indicated by Dr. Holt. Our age demographics, from an aggregate standpoint, we've shown this and we will hold this in the background, but we will change to the 7-day focus, the 7 and 14-day focus. But looking at the aggregate, again, it's the 15 to 24 and the 25 to 34 are the two largest components. And you can see their positivity rates from an aggregate exceed their normal population of Hillsborough County. And I think that's going to be important as we look at the 7 and 14-day component of this, which is this slide. What we see here is on the 25 to 34 on the blue, on the 7-day count, they were 28% of the positives, nearly 29%, and the 15 to 24 was nearly 25%. Well, when we look at the population as a whole, we know they far exceed their ratio. Again, the 15, the 25 to 34 makes up 15% of the population, but in the 7-day period, they made up nearly 29% of all the positives. So we will kind of overlay that information going forward on this slide. I mean, we see the positivity rate in the 15 to 24 and 25 to 34 range, respectively. Looking at the positive cases per day, we've seen this slide. Again, the yellow is the last 14 days, again, through 6/24. We've added on the far right-hand side the 7-day rolling average just from a comparison standpoint to for getting tests and getting in results in a better time. So we're looking at a 7-day average. Again, as Dr. Holt indicated, 373. When we look at a 7-day average, 275 as we look at a 14-day average. Regardless of that, they're both going up in the wrong direction. And again, on 6/24, which was 6/23's data, there were 700 new cases in Hillsborough County. So again, trending in the opposite direction that we all want. The testing, a lot of lines here, but the summary of this slide is the testing results that we're getting in are fairly consistent, are near 2,000 a day, even at the 7-day or 14-day average. But again, we have some variability, but less than what we've seen before historically as we presented this in the past month. So again, on 6/24, which was 6/23's data, there was nearly 2,900 test results came in. So again, with the state doing the testing at Raymond James, getting those results will hopefully make up that number that Dr. Lockwood has indicated, but we're seeing a lot less variability, but more higher results coming in on a daily basis. The positivity rate, again, we've seen this before. The green is the recent 14 days on 6/23 or 6/24, 6/23 data. Nearly 1 in 4 test results were positive. But if you look at the 7-day, nearly 19%, which is added on the orange line, and nearly 14% positive on the blue 14-day line. So again, those are trending upward in direction that we don't want. Hospital admissions, as we get this data in, it's self-reported by the hospitals, but the number of admits that the hospitals are doing on the previous day for COVID-related, not an ICU or in regular beds, just the total they're admitting. So we can see on June 23rd, there was 64 on the far right-hand side, 43 and 43 the previous days. But overall, that trend for hospital admits are not discharges, but admits is going up. So while this slide is very informative, I'm only going to focus a little bit on two numbers, and then the next slide will actually break it down a little bit easier. On the top right-hand side, number 2, the orange line on June 23rd shows 201. Well, that's the number of people who were in a hospital bed, non-ICU, with COVID. So that was 201 on that day, June 22nd, 190, previous day, 173. So that's COVID hospital beds on number 2. Number 3 in the bottom left-hand side, again, the orange peach line, there was 56 in the ICU on June 23rd. 48 in ICU on June 22nd. So what does that mean? This is what it means from a hospitalization standpoint. What we see in the blue diamond is the total of hospitalized for COVID, ICU, and non-ICU beds. We see that on June 3rd, it was 170. On June 23rd, 257. The gray dot, that is the non-ICU. So then that's trending upward from 134 on the far left-hand side to 201 on June 23rd. The orange peach line, that's the ICU. So again, that's trending upward. So everything that we look at from an aggregate of all the hospital beds from 172 on June 3rd to 257 on June 23rd. So the hospitalizations, as we see, is going up, especially in the last 5 to 6, 7 days, respectively. And again, this is self-reported from the hospitals. ED visits. Again, as Dr. Holt indicated at the start of the week, this is updated. Again, try to be updated by the FDOH every 7 to 10 days. But on the week of 6/14, there were 459 visits on average at the start of that week. Again, 338 the previous one. So again, that's trending upward. And we talked about the hospitalizations. We talked about the cases. I'll stop there. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anything further, Dr. Holt?
No, sir. That concludes our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. We have some questions. Mayor Ross, you recognize.
Thank you, Commissioner. I have a question for Dr. Holt. Doctor, how difficult would it be to back out the number of cases that are people who have recovered so that maybe we could get a picture of how many active can, I mean, we all know that it's increasing because of the hospitalizations and ED visits and so forth, but when we get the total number of cases, there's value in that, but it'd be almost even more value in it if we could back out the people that have recovered so we knew, okay, a month ago we had, you know, 1,500 active cases, now we have 2,000, whatever that number is. Is that something that is doable? And if so, is there any value in doing something like that?
Yes, sir. I'll try to answer your questions. If you look at our total population of 77,000 over the since it started, then it pretty much all of the people who have died or aren't still in a hospital of that time would be termed as somewhat recovered, if you will. I think the presenters that mentioned on Monday that some people have a prolonged recovery time. If I looked at the 7 days or the 14 days, we shift that same thing and try to look at how many people have recovered in 7 or 14-day positives, the one reporting, none of them have recovered at this time. Over the next few weeks, somewhere about 80 to 90% will recover over a period of time, and eventually 100%, but some take months and months. So it would be hard to track that on an individual basis. It would only be possible to use sort of statistical modeling to try to get that up. And you would only look back probably for your cumulative population that would be at least a month prior to the cases that you're currently looking at. So that's why we're focusing on what's here and now, that 7 to 14 days. These are the people who are actively infected and are infectious and present the risk to the public. I'll stop there.
Thank you, Doctor.
Okay. I know I saw some hands now. They're all gone. Mayor Castor, you recognize?
Yeah, thank you. Mine was up and they disappeared. So if anybody had their hand up, you may want to raise it again. I have a question, Dr. Holden. It goes back to one of the callers. Something that they brought up is that the mask order is going to basically be re-upped or voted on every 7 days. And so is there, and I'm sure that, you know, we'll have a lot of resistance to reapplying that every 7 days. So is there any type of mathematical equation or estimation that we could put at if we had, say, just the majority over 50% of people, when we should expect to see some type of a drop in these cases, or is that even possible with the low amount of testing we're doing proportional to the population total?
Yes, ma'am, it's a frequently asked question, and so I'll again do my best. Anybody wearing a mask right now, then if they're infectious, the hope is that they will reduce their transmission to someone else and collectively will reduce the amount of people that are infected. on an average from 3 to 2 and ideally eventually 1, and at that point the epidemic would end. So prevention of infection and following exposure won't begin to be seen for at least 2 weeks. And then it would be a percentage of the number who are complying with wearing the mask. But again, I think as we've talked about, wearing a mask is one of many things. So it won't be by itself the single factor that would show a decrease. But it is believed in the situations that we talked about where people gather, then they will reduce the amount of virus within the air, if you will, around them, and therefore that will cumulatively have the greatest effect compared to washing hands, which are all important, but that's what this is. So in a nutshell, I don't expect to see any change for 2 weeks. The magnitude of the change, it may not be, it won't be dramatic, but it hopefully we'll see the beginning to that term flattening, and we'll see a gradual slope of decline. But I do not expect a precipitous drop, and I'll stop there.
Okay, thank you. The only other question or comment that I have is that we're making all these decisions on the science and the data available. And I know that we still have a lag time in the response of the results to the tests that are given. And so is there any way that we could get that data quicker, like the hospital data? And I know the testing is, it comes out when it comes out. But to be able, instead of reporting once a week, it seems that we should be able to get information that's available in real time so we can make decisions based on that rather than week by week. And that's all for me, Chair.
Thank you. Commissioner Overman, you recognize.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Dr. Holt, for your report. And Mr. Wagner, I appreciate showing us where we are each week. And while, yeah, it would be nice to be able to see it real time, I do agree. Putting this data together and collating it takes a lot of effort, so I appreciate getting it at least, twice a week now. A couple of questions. Given that we've seen a pretty significant increase in the 15 to 24 and 25 to 34 age range consistently over the last few weeks, I am concerned about those age ranges for a couple of reasons. One, that's the bulk of our workforce for those that have returned to work. Two, majority of that age range are childbearing and child rearing ages. So I was curious if these presentations have been made to the school board and to the administration as they begin to make decisions so that they have this information as they make decisions for those that have children and those that are making decisions for their children.
Yes, ma'am. Very, very timely question. We have been engaging the school district as they have developed the plan. And I got a model of it, and we have a meeting scheduled, I believe, next week. I don't know exact day to formally sit down, review the data, but also their plans. And I think we all know that we can make plans, but the situation can significantly impact them. And so, as you clearly mentioned, regular updates of this data, I will provide with them. Yes, ma'am.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Commissioner Merman, you recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to ask just two questions, Doug, real quick, and thank you always for your report and your honesty and clarity. The emergency department, people coming in there, do you think, is there some correlation to people not being able to get an appointment real quickly, and maybe they just go to the emergency room? Have you seen
yes,
that?
Yes, ma'am. I believe that is strong enough of an assumption. There was that period of time where the calls were sent, they had been overwhelmed. And so it would have been about a week ago or last week, and that was particularly the surge. I think as Mr. Dudley mentioned, with the state expanding for Raymond James, and also the continued community-based testing, which I think is also critical. Raymond James should never be our single or dominant, but we need to get it out there as wide as possible. Combining those two things is hoped to relieve the emergency rooms of those that are seeking testing, whether they mildly ill or not ill at all. So I agree with your observation, and I believe there is a relief on the way. I'll stop there.
Okay, and then second part was getting a lot of requests from people as they're trying to understand our face mask policy, because we say it's based on facts and data that's been given to us by the healthcare experts. Has there been any thought of creating a dashboard that you could update daily for people, that they could go on a website and just look at it so they see we aren't making things up?
I have not.
Or maybe our county communications office could do that, and with your help, would that be possible?
I will certainly engage it. I think, you know, the links, if you will, that are often used, whether it's the CDC, Florida Department of Health, are available. As I think we all know, and I think Dr. Lockwood talked about it, all the doctors talked about it, is science is evolving. And what mm-hmm. used to be understood, and I'm, you may remember in early March when I came and spoke to the county commission, I did not recommend mask for at all times. But I also said I would not demonize anyone, because I think it's an unknown. We now know that the amount of virus that's put out, if you exhale, the air, the amount of pollution you have, if it's a virus, is decreased when you put a filter that stops some of it. It's not going to stop all of it. So it's not an absolute, but it does reduce it. And vice versa, it will stop some coming in. So yes, ma'am, I think the challenge is that by putting one thing to a link, which we can do and have done, there are alternate opinions available throughout all sorts of messages, whether it's the web or social media, that is hard to change. So, but I'm willing to be part of anything that would educate the public.
Okay.
I'll stop.
I know the counties that have had major increases are doing that. So the public can kind of see the trends and why the electeds are making decisions, based on those facts. So, I mean, like every day we get these emails and people are saying, you know, our hospitalizations are not going up, our death rate. Well, that's clearly not true. And I'm thinking, you know, they need more information. We can't make these decisions in a vacuum and expect people to trust us, because obviously they're not trusting us if they're so upset about a policy. But clearly, if you look at today, I mean, we have to do something. And this was the best answer we had at the time. So I appreciate your help. Thank you. And I'll work with Leona Lopez and see if there's something we could do. Thank you.
Mr. Merrill, you recognize?
Yeah, I was just going to add to that. I think Leona through the JIC has really been putting out a lot of information some of it being what you're talking about, Commissioner Merman, I think what they've realized is, and this is not unusual, I mean, because it's the same principle when it comes to selling or convincing people to do anything. It's not so much the information per se, it's how it's delivered, but also who delivers it.
Right.
And so that's been the latest focus. And we were on the phone earlier in the week with the administrator in Pinellas County. And there is a regional effort now to stand up the delivery of the message in a way and from people who maybe folks who are not convinced will listen to, if they won't listen to us or listen to the scientific evidence. But you're right, we need to continue to stand up as much of the factual information. However, as Doug said, then people just find something else to say, but this person says you're wrong. So it's like, you don't want to get into that sort of back and forth. But Leanna's on the agenda a little bit later, and maybe she can talk about it better than I can.
It's great there's a regional effort. I didn't know about that. And I think if that can get on board quickly, I think that would be a good thing. It would help us a lot.
Yeah, pulling out all the stops.
Yep. Good. Thank you. Thank you.
I want you all to know Mr. Merrill's on leave. He's still here working.
I know. He's never leaving.
Just not to be recognized.
I am.
Thank you, Chair. And hopefully that wasn't a death sentence for Mr. Merrill. You're never leaving. You poor man. So just to kind of follow up on Commissioner Merman's comment with regard to the dashboard, that's a great idea. I did share a dashboard example that I thought was very helpful from Sarasota County with Mr. Merrill earlier. Yes, okay, you probably saw the same one. You're probably hearing from the same folks that I'm hearing from. And so I thought that it looked like a good dashboard for information, just a snapshot. And I thought that was very helpful.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
So maybe we can, get something like that on a somewhat regular basis. I don't know if they put that out daily or if that's something that is, every other day or something. But anyway, so the other thing I wanted to address with regard to the school district, I know Commissioner Overman had some questions about the communication between the health department and physician information and the school district and the school board. And I wanted to assure everyone that, I know the superintendent and his cabinet members meet pretty regularly and communicate regularly and collaboratively with Dr. Holt and his team to help us get the information that we need in order to put the right policy in place and the right procedures in place for our school district. But also with specific regard to the EPG meetings, I have actually instructed my administrative assistant to forward every document that I get from the EPG, the PowerPoints, every piece of information goes automatically to all school board members and the superintendent for review, as well as our school board attorney, so that they all have the same information that I get. And I know a lot of them actually sit on these and watch these calls or listen in on these calls as well. So just to assure you that I'm not keeping the information to myself in a silo. I am sharing all the information that I get with all the other school board members and the superintendent so that to be helpful in making those decisions for our school district. So thank you for the question and allowing me to address that.
Commissioner Overman, you recognize.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Ms. Snively, for that answer. I recognize that our watching public may not want to sit through like 2 days of 4 hours of these meetings, and helping your families and know what's going on and why it's important to take precautions and as they prepare for children to return back to school, I thought might be quite helpful too. So while we show all of that here in our meetings, they may not watch both. And so I know you guys have great watching watching of your meeting. So I just thought maybe that might be something you could add to your agenda. But my question really is for Dr. Holt. A couple of days ago, I read an interesting article by Dr. Fauci, and he had indicated that there was, his observations were that 20 to 40% of the people that test positive of COVID-19, somewhere in that range, are actually asymptomatic, which I don't know if we're tracking that to determine how many people actually are tested positive and are asymptomatic, which means they're still shedding the virus, which means they're a Trojan horse in our community. They're walking around with the virus and they can give it out if they aren't self-quarantined because they don't have any symptoms. So are we tracking asymptomatic test positive individuals to determine if they are in fact self-quarantining or staying out of the public and not returning to work or any of those kinds of things? Because I think that's a really big part of our spread is people don't believe they're sick. They got a test positive and they feel fine and they just go back out into the community as well as to their families and to their workforce and workplace. And that presents obviously a very significant risk. And I'll stop there.
This is Dr. Holt. Yes, ma'am. Previously, to be honest with you, I have not looked over the last 2 week, 7 day period, which I can check with my epidemiologist team and see if they can break out that question regarding the most recent questions, most recent positives. And historically, before that, the last time we explored that, our epidemiologists were documenting about a 10% asymptomatic of the positive test reported being asymptomatic, and most of those coming from a known or believed to be exposure. But I will see if I can't get more current data because that is the most valuable is what's happening now, not what was happening before. I'll stop there.
Right. Now that we have many more younger people testing positive that may be asymptomatic, or as I call them, the Trojan horse, it's walking around with, you know, COVID-19 and shedding it in their community. I think it would be valuable to see if we've seen an increase above that 10%. So thank you very much, Dr. Holt. I appreciate it.
Okay. Commissioner Merman, you recognize.
Oh, I'll take my hand down. Sorry.
Okay. Okay, Dr. Holt, Mr. Wagner, thank you very much. We now move on to update on testing costs and operations. Ms. Lopez.
Good afternoon. Thank you, members of the EPG, for allowing me to provide a brief update on the test scheduling call center operations. And at the conclusion, I'll also address some of the questions that came up in your last discussion. As I mentioned last Thursday, the Emergency Management Testing Call Center is a partnership between our healthcare partners and healthcare services, the county's customer service, and support department that provides overall support and integration to the county system, and our IIO department that provides the infrastructure support. To recap this week, unprecedented call volumes have continued, and technical capacity issues continue to tax our system, as well as insufficient staff resources to meet the demand, even with adding an additional 16 agents between last week and the beginning of this week. On Tuesday, June 23rd, Hillsborough County added a new toll-free line dedicated solely for COVID-19 coronavirus testing to help alleviate wait times and reduce drop calls. And while the new number was intended to ease wait times, it was never intended to alleviate the entire issue. We knew we had several actions we needed to take and plan to do so throughout this week and into next week to make it easier for our customers to interact with the county when scheduling a testing appointment. Those actions included launching an online appointment application built by the IIO team and ultimately working with our call center vendor to take over the test scheduling call center operations to alleviate our healthcare partners, and we anticipated that that would happen next week. Yesterday, June 24th, circumstances occurred at 7:30 a.m. that required us to take swift action and transfer the testing call center operations to our external call center vendor prior to the 9 a.m. hour. After the transfer, immediate wait times were just over an hour, which does not reflect the county's commitment to service. Our vendor worked quickly to staff additional agents to handle the call demand, and by noon, wait times were reduced to just over 33 minutes. And by 3 p.m., they were approximately 13 minutes. By close of business, we had 80 agents assisting our residents. Additionally, at noon yesterday, we soft launched the online appointment application, and publicity of the new online feature began today. Since its launch, the page has received more than 6,000 visits. We remain committed to meeting the county service standards. Operations are now fluctuating with between 80 and 100 customer service agents. The latest update I received at about 1 p.m. this afternoon advised that we were down to 4 to 7 calls waiting at a time, with an average wait for the day around 1 minute 30 seconds. I do want to publicly thank all the county teams, especially IIO and customer service and support, for the incredibly fast and efficient work to get these new processes launched to better serve our residents, as well as our vendor for their flexibility and responsiveness as we continually pivot to meet the customer service needs of our residents. As a reminder, the new number to call to make an appointment at any of the county 7 testing sites is 888-513-6321, and call center hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. weekdays. Our residents can also visit hcfl.gov.net/COVID testing to self-schedule testing appointments. This concludes the update related to the call center. As Mr. Merrill mentioned, we are working with our partners in Pinellas County, St. Petersburg, Pinellas County, the City of Tampa, and Hillsborough County, and we have launched a regional campaign related to face masks with our local sports organizations. That launched on Saturday, and it's incredibly successful so far. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers were our first partner. I've seen raw footage of the Rays video clips, so I'm sure that those are going to be equally as successful. Additionally, the county launched a new campaign related to face coverings last Thursday, which I believe I shared with the EPG in an email update, and that is incredibly successful as well. We've also incorporated statistics, and we are now using some of the data that is presented here at the EPG meetings and turning it into graphics that we can share with our residents. There is one other item I want all of you to know, and I have been remiss in not sharing it with you, but we do have HTV crew and staff member Katie Jones produces at the end of each EPG meeting 2 to maybe 3 minutes, but usually it's between 1.5 and 3 minute video with the top 4 or 5 items that are discussed and actions taken here. And that is shared with the public on YouTube and all of our social channels. The other item I believe that was asked was the dashboard. I've seen the examples that have been shared with Mr. Merrill and with Ms. Wise, and the communications department is committed to creating a dashboard. We just need the data behind the scenes to create that data-driven, real-time dashboard. Anytime we get into a manual snapshot, I want to discourage that, because one, we could, if something blows up, we could fail to, or we've got a crisis, we can fail to update it in a timely manner. We want to make sure that our residents know the data is coming straight from the source and it's not being manipulated. That assists with credibility, and that's incredibly important. So we are committed to working with DOH, our partners at TGH, to build a dashboard for our residents.
Awesome. Thank you. That's great.
Any other questions? I'm open.
Let me say this before I call on other questions. In March, the first part of March, regardless of what governmental entity we represent, be it the three cities, be it school board, be it the sheriff's office, be it the county, none of us ever anticipated that we would be in the midst of a pandemic like we are now. No one had ever been through this unless you were around in 1918. And in 1918, we didn't have any of the mechanisms and the technical aspect that we have today. We all have worked specifically our staffs in trying to meet the needs of every citizen in this county. And it has not always worked perfectly.
Right.
We had no idea when we set up phone lines for people to get the test, that the phone lines would crash because so many people would be calling in to get the test. We had no idea that when we received the CARES Act money, that in one day, I believe, 1 week, if I heard that right from Ms. Ziegler, over 5,000 people were calling in and applying for the dollars that we had. We had no idea that even when we put the registration for tests on the website, I think Ms. Lopez just say 6,000 people in one day, if I'm not mistaken. We just had no idea of what would happen with this pandemic, be it good or bad. So having said that, I want to personally thank the staff that have worked so hard, Ms. Lopez, everyone in this county staff that have worked so hard to try to meet the needs of the 1.5 citizens of this county. Whether the people like what we do or do not like what we do, our staffs have worked so very hard to try to meet your needs. Sometimes they have been blasted. Sometimes they have been had rude things said to them. Believe me, I understand that. But they have worked very, very, very hard to try to meet the needs of this county. Mr. Merrill probably worked 24 hours a day with staff trying to meet those needs. Ms. Wise, after taking over, well, we'll be taking over, but working with Mr. Merrill in these last couple of weeks trying to make sure that every need is met in this county. We thank you for what you've done. It has been difficult. It has been very difficult. None of us, not any one of us, had any idea of what to expect in March. We still don't know what to expect. The numbers continue to go up. More people want to get tested. Now the state's coming in to help. So for all of those out there, just please understand that the staff is doing the very best they can. They're changing things every hour to try to meet the needs of the people of this county. And I just want to personally thank all the staff of this county and all the cities that are the school board people and everyone else that have tried to work to meet the needs of the people in this county. Now we're seeing numbers rise and we're back at what do we do and trying to sit at the drawing board and dictate or determine what's going on. So I just had to say that. But Snively, you recognize.
Thank you. Thank you, Leanna, for your presentation and that is very true, Chairman Miller, all what you just said. Who knew? But I do think that our county has been very responsive, and we appreciate all the efforts that everyone has made to give the best level of customer service that we can to the citizens of this county. And so with that, I just had a couple of questions. One, I wanted to find, well, first of all, thank you for getting the online appointment setting mechanism going. That is fantastic because I was getting communications from constituents being on hold for up to almost an hour, and now only one to 5 minutes on hold is much, much better. I did have a question someone sent me about canceling appointments. Are if you call in and make an appointment and then choose to cancel that appointment in order to give that slot to someone else, the person who reached out to me said they were not able to do that. Is there a mechanism where someone can give up their appointments, or how does that work so that people can have those appointments and not be at capacity? Or do you overbook just in anticipating that appointments will not show up?
So that's what we have been looking at to address that. But at this time, especially moving to the external vendor, it's very difficult for us to cancel and change appointments. We just ask that they rebook. We are trying to see, that's why it's so important to see how many people, why we ask people to schedule appointments, is then we can see if we've got an under or over. So we're trying now to see if there's a average of no-show appointments. And if we have can determine a significant number of no-shows, then we can begin to overbook some of those appointments. So we just ask that at this point, if they can't make it, to cancel, because we always have a few walk-ups or people that show up without appointments, and that allows us to accommodate a few of those. at certain areas, but really it's extremely important that people call the number, register for an appointment. It helps us determine resources, staffing. You know, I know I've seen the recent articles as you have about the longer lines, and that is many people that are just scared and they're showing up without appointments. But with the state's assistant, we're adding an additional almost 4,000 appointments next week. And, you know, call, get scheduled, go to your appointment. If you can't make it, miss it. But we are going to track those no-shows and see if we can begin to overbook some appointments. We Thank also have equities an issue, so we've set aside some that only call agents can book to make sure that all of our residents have access.
Okay, thank you so much for that information. And the other thing I was getting feedback on was complimentary towards the recap sessions. Just wanted to offer that because right. I've got some really great feedback on people who appreciate that recap video that you're posting after each of the EPG meetings. So thank you for offering that up to the public as well.
Great.
Thanks.
Commissioner Merwin, you're recognized.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Commissioner Merwin, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And all the comments have been said, Commissioner Miller, I couldn't have said it better. Ms. Snively and Liana, Mr. Merrill, thank you for doing this. People appreciate information. And even though they may not like it, but they'll understand why we're making the decisions we are. But Liana, you've really, I tell you, this online, the new number, the call center, the dashboard, everything is doing great, which means we'll probably be over this in about 2 weeks after we get this all set up. Ha ha. We hope.
We could only hope.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you. It's definitely a team effort. We could not have done it without IIO or with, you know, without Gene Early and EM. They have been our partners throughout this, and it's just been a team effort. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Lopez. County Attorney thank update, you. Ms. Beck.
Yes. Good afternoon, EPG board members and Chair Miller, Christine Beck, County Attorney. The first item on the update is to make you aware that Governor DeSantis did execute Order 20-150, which is the order that relates to virtual meetings. And so that order now allows virtual meetings to continue through August 1st. And if you recall, the EPG sent a letter requesting that extension, and so did the board. And the second item is the extension of the emergency order extending the local state of emergency, which, as you know, has to be renewed every 7 days. And so at this point, Mr. Chair, it would be appropriate to entertain a motion for that order.
Is there a motion?
I'll move to extend.
By Commissioner Overman to extend the emergency order. Is there any further discussion on the motion? Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Miller?
Yes.
Overman?
Yes.
Merman?
Yes.
Pazinski?
Yes.
Castor?
Yes.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that one more time?
Yes.
Thank you. Ross?
Yes.
Lott?
Yes.
Snively?
Yes.
Motion carried 8-0.
Okay, Ms. Beck, was there anything further?
No, sir, that's all.
Okay, we're now moving to EPG discussions. Mayor Ross, you recognize.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'd just like to make a motion that we increase the age for the face covering order from children of the age of 2 to 8.
Okay, Mayor Ross, I'm going to rule that out of order. And the reason I'm ruling it out of order is because we made a motion on Monday that we would not bring forth the executive order concerning face masks until this coming Monday. We gave it a 7-day period, and that would be out of the order of which we established as a board. And I think I'm correct on that. Am I right, Ms. Beck? Ms. Beck?
I'm sorry, I muted myself. Yes, it is a 7-day order, and on Monday there will be an opportunity to address any issues with the face covering order.
Mayor Ross, understood?
Understood.
Okay. Ms. Nivey, recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mayor Ross, for bringing that up, because I think that is important. And I look forward to having that conversation on Monday before we vote again on the order. I would respectfully ask that we add a discussion about daycares and summer camps and how they fit into the order, or potentially exempting those operations. If I may add that as well to the agenda for Monday. And then finally, based on the Bogiers who spoke earlier in public comment, and several communications that I've received and conversations I've had with business owners, I would respectfully ask that we revisit paragraph number 7 in the order with regard to business operators requiring to ensure compliance and enforce the provisions of the order. I think there has been several unintended consequences that have come up with regard to that particular paragraph, and I would like to hear from constituents, and I imagine that some other members here on the EPG will also hear from some constituents with some real life situations and stories that may be compelling to bring to light and to have further discussion about that particular paragraph in the order. So I respectfully ask that that also be added to the agenda on Monday. Thank you so much.
Okay. Commissioner Merman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mayor Ross, and I still call you Mayor. What the heck? And Ms. Snively, I do have an amendment ready for Monday dealing with both those. It reads, all children under the age of 18 participating in organized youth activities, including youth sports teams, leagues, youth clubs, programs, childcare, summer camps, and recreation camps in private, public, or nonprofit settings would be exempt. I've been working with the county attorney's office on that language yesterday and today, and that's what they gave me for Monday for discussion.
Yeah. So any further discussion of any items that needs to come before us today? Any further discussion of any items to come before us today? Commissioner Overman, you're recognized.
Thank you. You know, when we considered our order and we made certain exemptions, we talked about nonprofits. And while I appreciate the desire to not invade or affect the, religious organizations, when we talk about nonprofits, that's a tax status. And a lot of our nonprofits do have enterprise services they provide, just like a private business does. And so I'd like to entertain in the future a conversation about how we define nonprofits and what nonprofits that actually do provide services to the public, and whether or not they should be included in our order. So I don't have to have that today, but I would like to make sure that we actually address that going forward.
Okay. Any further discussions? Any further discussions? Seeing none, everyone have a great weekend. Stay safe. We'll adjourn.
You've been listening to the Hillsborough County Emergency Policy Group meeting this afternoon, recorded earlier.